Ticket Network is the place you gotta be. The MLB season is in full swing right now, and the number one place to get tickets to your favorite team is ticketnetwork.knpshow.com. That's ticketnetwork.knpshow.com. Ticket Network has the tickets where you want them, when you want them, at the best prices available. Whether going out to the old ballpark for some baseball or looking to score NBA or NHL playoff tickets, not for the Blackhawks anymore, Ticket Network is your number one stop. Use our exclusive link, ticketnetwork.knpshow.com, to support the show. That's ticketnetwork.knpshow.com. We thank you. Welcome, everybody, to episode number 35 of the KMP Show. The triumphant return, well, I think our fourth at this point. I am your host, Jonathan Playtech, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Mr. International Superstar, Rich Kraich, back from touring Italy and the subcontinents. He's ready to go. He's got.
It's absolutely my fault.
Did you smuggle anything back from Italy?
Actually, believe it or not, I smuggled an orange in, and I did not know that there was an orange in my backpack, and they never caught me. So, if there's some weird like bug that flies around, or like some weird thing, they're like, "What is killing all these crops?
Yeah.
Who introduced this bug?
That's
to
on
America?
You, buddy.
Like, it's absolutely me." And they say like, and there's a sign that says like, "No fruit." And I was like, "Who's gonna bring fruit here?" Like, I kind of
what kind of idiot would bring fruit back from Italy?
Yeah, I was like, "Who's got fruit in their backpack? Just like hanging out or whatever." And then I'm you know, we get home and I open up my backpack. I went, "Uh-oh." Like, it's a damn good orange though. I still ate it anyway. So
is it a good? Is it fundamentally different from the oranges that you can get?
I think so. Yeah, I enjoy their oranges a little bit more. Okay. Because you got the sea breeze or whatever, you know, you get a little bit of that
right
too, but they were big. I mean, these things were just monsters. Yeah, these lemons too were just like gigantic lemons.
Yeah,
like,
well, that, you know, that's what they say,
fucking huge lemons. So that was kind of cool too. So I was just kind of seeing those. So apples though were very small compared to our apples.
Oh, well, you know, that's what they say, is that Americans we get the bigger apples because right. Over there, you know, it's a cultural thing. They don't have the years of growing big apples, normal sized apples that you know that we do.
Also, they probably don't even put steroids in their food quite as much as we do, because like the meat wasn't that big either. Like, you got like a steak and you're like, that's a steak.
Yeah,
like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It looked like a skirt steak, and I was like, all
right. Well, right, but that's like, did you see any obese Italians there?
No, exactly.
Right,
and then
that's
like,
why.
Portions. I'm like, oh, that wasn't nearly enough for me to eat just one meal. So yeah, it was interesting. But my favorite part of it, and I think I don't remember if I sent you this text or not. My you know, signal was in and out or whatever. So I was at they have these like cafes or whatever. They're like a pastry place, and they have espresso, and then they also have alcohol as well, which is the greatest thing ever. You can get like an espresso and then a road beer, like a beer to go, because nobody cares if you're just walking and drinking, because it's like, whatever.
Well, yeah.
So, which is always funny when people are like, "Oh, I'm gonna go to New Orleans because you can like drink there." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go to a beautiful place and drink on the streets too."
Right.
Like,
yes. And then you
swipe New Orleans.
Right.
Yay.
And then you don't have to worry about some Fisai bro taking a crap in the dumpster as you walk down the street.
Exactly. Right. So it's
like whoa, oh, you
can get a hurricane. The hurricanes are what they call it, like that big, like tall drink that everybody
right.
gets.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, they're like, "Oh, you get a hurricane, walk in the streets." I was like, "Yeah, I was just fucking drinking whatever I wanted in the streets of Italy." But my favorite thing is I went to one of those places and I walk out, and something catches my eye, and I look back, and I tell Michelle, just like, "Hey, wait up," you know, my wife Michelle, and I'm like, wait, hold on. I get my camera out, and I take a picture of the cooler, because the cooler has a Sprite can in there.
Okay.
And I want you to try to guess who the athlete was that was on the Sprite can.
Oh, boy.
Now, think Sprite marketing. Think of how Sprite usually markets, like what type of sports, what type of leagues or whatever, and then I think you'll have a little bit of a clue, but I don't think you're going to guess who these actual
people
are.
Oh, let's see. I know LeBron has a Sprite campaign now.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. It's actually a really good commercial because it makes me want to drink Sprite, but it can't be LeBron, because then you wouldn't, right, this wouldn't be the game.
I wouldn't have stopped to take a picture of LeBron. No,
right.
No. So you're warm, though. You're warm. I'll tell you that.
Kobe also had a Sprite campaign that
and
I recall.
He lived in Italy. He lived in Italy. Grew up in Italy.
Oh, actually. He did? Oh, I didn't know that.
It wasn't.
But it can't be Kobe, though, because you wouldn't.
No.
Hmm.
It wasn't Mike D'Antoni, Italian basketball legend Mike D'Antoni. So.
Oh, man. Who? But I was warm with LeBron somehow.
Warm league-wise. League and sport you got.
Vinny Del Negro?
Now you're getting very warm.
Ooh, so I'm very warm with Vinny Del Negro.
Yes. It's not a coach, though.
Not a coach.
It's a player. It's an active player. Well, I think active player. You know this man, and you love this man.
Gennaro Pargo?
It's not Gennaro Pargo.
Because we saw Gennaro Pargo at an ESPN zone, and it was great.
You are correct in the assumption that I would have stopped and went, oh my God, Gennaro Pargo is on the Sprite can.
That's exactly my thinking.
Right, okay. No, you're not. That's not a bad guess. But you were closer to Vinny Del Negro in terms of...
complexion?
Well, I was going to say nationality, but I don't think Vinny's actually. I think Vinny just like his dad grew up in Brooklyn or something like that. But similar color. It is a white man.
All right. Active in the NBA. Player.
Yes. Active player in the NBA that would have ties to Italy.
Oh.
Like a lot of ties to Italy.
Well, Manu Ginobili. No, Manu. He's Spanish.
No, he's Argentinian.
Oh, he's Argentinian.
Or whatever. Yeah. No. Okay. So you're
all right.
You're
who?
Getting
all right. Give it to me. I got nothing.
He's a former Chicago Bull. I'll give you one more guess.
Oh.
He enjoys meatballs per Stacey King.
Oh, now I'm getting farther away from it.
Oh no.
Who is it?
Marco Bellinelli. So I stop and I'm like, oh my God, I got to take a picture of this. And then like, so I get up there to take the picture. I'm like, oh my God, like their Sprite cans have Marco Bellinelli on it. Like, that's incredible. Like,
yeah.
Like not even Dino Gallinari, not even like the good Italian basketball player, but like Marco Bellinelli. They're like, he's in the league, right?
Yes,
like,
yeah, his name ends in a vowel, whatever. Put him on there.
Right, okay, he's good enough. So then, I bend down to take the picture, and then the guy who's like working the store is like, is something wrong? And I was like, oh no, I'm just taking a picture of Marco Bellinelli. And he just looks at me. And I went, Marco Bellinelli, the guy on the Sprite can. He goes, who? And I just like, well, yeah, that's
yep, Italy that's why.
Sports,
that's
but,
I mean,
yeah.
They,
right.
Here you go, Italy. Here's Marco Bellinelli, your own countryman. What?
Like maybe just throw a football guy on there. You know what I mean? Like I know Sprite, you're the NBA, you're the basketball, you're the
right.
drink, but maybe just throw like some random
Italy's
football guy
probably
on there.
Not lining up to see basketball.
Not so much. They have some active leagues, but I think it's
right. But it's
pretty,
not
pretty
to the point where it's like because like in China it's a big game,
right? Yeah, like they'll erect statues of Stefan Marbury, but I don't think Marco Bellinelli is getting any statues.
So was it a recent can? It wasn't like
a, no, it was a brand new can. Yeah,
okay,
no,
so
because
sometimes
can,
there's
absolutely.
Like old ones. Like it was an old run of like you know, okay, this guy had like a hot rookie season, so he got a can.
Yeah, no, it was like an active like. So I tried to do a little bit more research, but I couldn't really find much. But what was pretty cool though is I put it up on Facebook, and then I think like 2 hours later, Marco Bellinelli himself liked the photo.
Marco Bellinelli made an appearance on your
whoever runs Marco Bellinelli's PR.
Bellinelli has PR?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Like at first, I was like, whatever, because I like tagged him, and I'm just like, well, who cares? You know, it's just it's some PR guy. And then like an hour later, I'm like, Marco Bellinelli cannot actively pay somebody to run his social media for him. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't think Marco's running with that much money. That's like, or that much like that. He doesn't have the time to just like do, like maybe someone's like, you should get someone to run this, and he's just like, what? Who cares?
Like what is? I don't even care. You know what? Maybe he takes it seriously. He just pretends it's a company, but it's him. He's like, I got people that do that, and he's just furiously typing away at his phone.
Yeah, Marco Bellinelli, parentheses, the real, just in case, because maybe there's a lot
the
of
the real Marco
Bellinelli.
Yeah, there's a lot of Marco Bellinelli impersonators out there. Right. Although you got to think, coming from Italy, maybe Marco Bellinelli is like John Smith, right? You know, it's not like the,
oh, that's true. Yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah,
because right. Facebook isn't, you know, the international, so he may be saying, you know, not that people are making fake Marco Bellinelli accounts. It's just there's a lot of Marco Bellinellis
from
Italy.
He got his Facebook page like 2 years too late, and there was already like every Marco Bellinelli was taken or whatever.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah, I that makes a lot of sense.
Maybe that's what he's doing. Let's see what is Marco Bellinelli up to.
Yeah, when you asked if he was active in the league, I think he's New Orleans.
Yeah, that would make sense. Let's see, what is his Wikipedia say? Yep, the Charlotte Hornets.
Oh, Charlotte Hornets. Well, there you go. Wrong Hornets, but
yeah, they're the
whatever,
Pelicans
Charlotte,
now.
New Orleans, Pelicans.
You're
Hornets,
right. We dissected that once. That's the craziest branding. Is that the Hornets went the Hornets were in New Orleans, then went to Charlotte, or what was the genesis?
They were in Charlotte. So they were in Charlotte. So the Charlotte Hornets went to New Orleans, became the New Orleans Hornets. And then they turned into the New Orleans Pelicans, and then the Charlotte Bobcats became the Charlotte Hornets, but then like the Charlotte Hornets then, the new Charlotte Hornets, the former Bobcats, like retained all the history of the
Bobcats
in some weird deal. I no well yes, and then also some of the history of like the Hornets. It's kind of, so it's one of those weird things. It's what's exactly going to happen when, because at some point the Supersonics are going to come back. Like Seattle's going to get a team again,
right?
And then it's going to be this big ordeal of like, what the hell do we do with the Thunder? Do we just like lop off the Thunder's history?
Right. Like you don't have any your history. Like you basically just began with Kevin Durant.
Which if I was the Oklahoma City, I'd be fine with that. Because like, do you really want to be like, yeah, hey, look at the banners? And it's like, yeah, you didn't. You
right. That was
know.
A different team and a different place right, from like, a different time. Like, nobody yeah, in Oklahoma City you, is talking about Sean not. Kemp. No, he's right, like, exactly. You ever yeah, seen like... Sean Kemp play? Like, well,
no.
No. Yeah. Who's going to bring him back? There's the tech guys are trying to bring him back, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think they got the arena and all that set up, I'm sure. I think it's actually private money, too, which is good.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Because that's what started it all, which is actually funny, is everybody kind of got all mad at the NBA and all that sort of stuff, and roughly so, but Seattle was pretty steadfast and like, nah, we're not going to pay for this thing.
Good, like, good on you, Seattle.
This arena's fine. Like,
and then good yeah. on you, tech bros, like, okay, never mind, we have the money anyway. Because,
yeah, oh, wait, we have like $500 million to build this stadium. It's not that much money.
Right.
Like, and then we can, you know, get all the profits, but we, you know, mm-hmm. have to endure the expenses, which is a rarity.
That's exactly how businesses
world, so.
Are supposed to work, I think, right. is that you pay right. out money to get to build like the store or the mm-hmm. pay the rent on the store and all that stuff, and then you get the profits from you know charging entry to the
don't
store.
Like
I think that's
no,
how
no,
it works. But there's been a lot that's, since we've been away. I got laid off. We got laid off by ESPN. We weren't even working for them. They just laid us off.
Yeah, I didn't even know. I got like a letter and I was like, oh, jeez.
They're like, yeah, don't even show up to work tomorrow. Like, I wasn't gonna.
I wasn't going to, but now I definitely won't. So, yeah.
That was bad. I mean, lots. I did not know, you know.
That was a bloodletting.
A couple months ago when they were the reports were like, you know, people are feverishly calling their agents because they think they're going to be let go. I'm like, ah, whatever. Like, they'll let like low level, like they're triplicate redundant NBA or college football. God, they have so many college football people. Like, they'll just let them go. It's not really going to be anybody. Nobody I see on TV is in danger, and that it was definitely not the case.
No, and I was kind of interested as well that when it was all said and done, and there were quite a few, but I thought, you know, maybe stupidly, I thought that a lot of the layoffs were going to be your former athlete guys that I'm sure are not coming cheap. Like a Mike Ditka or whatever is not coming cheap. Those
right.
the bleeding brains like idiots that you have on NFL Countdown or whatever that don't say anything and just kind of babble and say National Football League a bunch of times. Like those guys probably don't come very cheap. And there wasn't many of those at first. And then little by little you saw like a Trent Dilfer and then like a Danny Cannell and a few other guys like that. And I thought was kind of interesting because I thought either one or the other, like you said, it was just going to either be the low level bloggers or they were going to go at the top and be like, all right, look, we don't need Ditka. We don't need this guy. We don't need these guys. We'll keep the low level guys that make, you know, 40,000, mm-hmm. 50,000 or whatever. But like the top tier guys, these sort of dudes, we're going to get rid of those guys. And it was kind of interesting because I don't know what the real reasoning was of who they let go, obviously not being privy to contracts, but it seemed to be just a weird collection of like some of those, like your Trent Dilfers or whatever, mm-hmm. but then also like your Jason Starks or whatever, which is like, oh geez, like that's like your MLB insider.
Right.
Like, really? That's the guy you're going to let go or whatever. And then it'd be like some low level blogger guys. And then this guy here and there. So it was kind of interesting in that sense that it was hard to get an idea of what it exactly was other than just like maybe guys with their contracts do or something like that. But it was, it was a little interesting, the collection.
Yeah, and then we're going to see, we're not going to see Bucci Main anymore. His contract isn't going to be renewed. John Buchergross, who is like the only not weird hockey guy who actually understood and talked hockey at the...
Poor Barry Melrose. There's no one to talk to him ever again.
No, nobody cares. Nobody cares about hockey. You know, it was Bucci Main who was driving like all the hockey segments that Melrose was a part of, and now... It's just like, who's Melrose going to talk to? Scott Van Pelt?
They're just going to have Melrose sit in a room by himself. He's like, Predators, you don't care. Like, why do you
like,
even,
let's be real.
Just
you
fire
gotta,
me.
You don't
just
care about
go.
Any of it. They let Doug Glanville go. Doug Glanville's looking for work now. It's I was surprised that, you know, just like you said, there's so many big names, big ticket names that are at the top. If you're ESPN and you want to save money, those guys are the first to go. Because, like, oh, God, we paid way too much for live sports rights, and now we're losing subscribers. Oh, my God.
Right. Oh, God, this bubble is about to burst.
Yeah. And Disney just bought us, and there's probably all kinds of contingents on, you know, we got to show that we're profitable, et cetera, et cetera. But it was a good, like, from top to bottom. They got rid of their afternoon syndicated drive time radio show, Russillo and Cannell.
Yeah, yeah.
They both got axed. So, you know, a bloodletting... at ESPN, making the way for I guess, I don't know, new talent. Oh, no, making way for Woj, because they just signed Woj to like a 3-year deal.
Yes, yeah, and yeah, that could be a reason why some of those NBA guys got let go, too. Woj is
a big name. He's a heavy hitter.
Yeah, he's
NBA
a big name,
media.
But he carries a big blowtorch too. When he doesn't like you, he can swing a big stick, and I think he might have done that in this case.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I
there are
not
some people
like,
with whom Woj is beefing with some people at ESPN.
Yeah,
that he like
yeah, that's yeah. I can't go into like too much detail or whatever, because like the one person that kind of let me know about it was like, I don't know if it's actually true, but just kind of this is what's rumblings or whatever, is like if you look at the pattern of guys that got let go, some of them have not always been under the best, you know, them and Woj have not always
right, they don't
along,
exchange
so.
Christmas cards.
No, so yeah, it could have been a thing where, and I don't know, it could just be a complete coincidence that Woj is coming in and those guys got let go.
Right.
Because it was a part of the mass firings too, so it could have just been a thing like that too, but there were some people that were kind of curious on the names and then, you know, kind of made more sense once once they were like, oh, wait a minute, Woj is coming in. Nah, never mind.
Are they going to make money with him, you think? Because his vertical podcast is really well, but now he's going to be out on his own. Now it's not Yahoo pushing it. Now it's ESPN pushing it. Obviously a bigger base, but, you know, I don't know. Are they going to...
I guess, yeah. See, the problem with the Woj is a lot of what Woj gets from... It's like Twitter. You know what I mean? It's like him breaking news on Twitter and then people retweeting it or whatever, which that doesn't really do... Because when he
that doesn't make ESPN
stuff,
money.
Right, exactly. His written stuff isn't, like, that great. Like, a lot of his good stuff and a lot of what makes Woj Woj is that he does incredible reporting and is able to get these things before. I mean, like, that guy knows the NBA draft before it's happening. Like, he's like, yeah, these guys pick here, these guys pick here, these guys, you know, this is,
right.
They're going to pick this, and they're going to pick this, and this guy's going to pick this. Like, he know, that's where you get it in, but it's all on, like, Twitter. And I wonder if ESPN then says, hey, let's reel it in a little bit on that, and we're going to release your news exclusively on the, because that's going to make you money then on the website.
Okay, right,
drive
right.
The website, get those ad rates up, get that sort of stuff doing. Put them on TV. Say, okay, breaking news. Woj is going to come on ESPN right, or you know SportsCenter right now or whatever. Make it a commodity that people just can't follow on Twitter, because right now you can set up a notification for Woj on Twitter and then you get everything that he tweets.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just wait 20 seconds and everyone's going to, you know, retweet it and go, oh my God, Woj bomb. Ah. but what value is that to ESPN other than they have this guy?
Right.
You
so,
know what I mean?
So they are going to force him on TV then. Let's put a muzzle on you breaking big stories on Twitter and come do that. Come do that on, you know, the mother nipple and come do that on a segment on, you know, SportsCenter or NBA Countdown or whatever else. Yeah.
Is there a fix for ESPN in your mind? Like, what do you think? Is it just kind of like reshuffling the decks a little bit? Or is there no fix that's possible? Because it's just like,
you know,
maybe
what,
your business model just doesn't really work anymore.
You got to find a way out of those live sports contracts. You do. You can't, whatever you're paying for three nights of the NFL draft, whatever, how much you paid, it was probably too much.
Did you see those ratings?
Were they bad?
They were great.
Oh, they were great? Oh.
I swear to God, Roger Goodell could like just stand on there and just fart for like 3 hours and have like a bunch of dudes on a desk. They were like World Series numbers.
Oh my goodness.
Like, this country will just do anything to consume football.
Yep. Even day three, round four.
Why are you still watching?
And people are showing up. It was like a festival that people showed up to.
Yeah, boo! I do kind of want to go to an NFL draft at one point, just so I can boo everybody that gets picked. Which is my favorite part about the NFL draft, is like, nobody's ever happy about any pick for any team ever. They're like, the Cleveland Browns select this guy from like this college that you've definitely never heard of. Oh, come on!
Hey, that was the Bears this year, my friend.
Yeah,
that was the Bears. We'll get to that. But back to ESPN, you know what? It's that, and I don't know what they're getting from places like Sling TV and PlayStation View and YouTube TV now has their own streaming TV offering. And really, I don't know where that stuff is going to go. I don't know if eventually you will be paying $75 a month for YouTube TV, and then everybody will herald it as this new great thing because you're streaming TV, and then it's like, well, yeah, but you're paying just
same
as much.
Thing. Right, yeah, right.
You know, even now with like Sling TV and PlayStation View, it's like, oh, it's only $40 a month. I said, yeah, but how do you watch it? How do you get to it? Oh, well, you got to have an internet connection. How do you get an internet connection? Oh, well, I got to pay Comcast. Well, how much are you paying Comcast? Oh, like $100 a month. Well, you're paying the same amount. There's no difference. But you know, getting income from that, there it'll normalize. There's going to have to be a correction and a cut down. But I think that moving forward, just not spending too much, because they thought live sports was going to be it, and then it's not. And especially this year, they saw with the NFL ratings decline, at least for the games. Apparently, the draft is doing very well, but for the games, when people stop watching, that's double dipping of getting it in your ass, because you're losing subscribers, and then the people that you still have aren't watching. So right. Sure, you're getting the subscriber fee from them, but they're not showing up. You know, you can't take their ratings, their share, to advertisers and say, okay, let's make money on this again, on these subscribers again. You know, there's a lot being made of their liberal content, and I think too much is being made of it.
Yes, nobody doesn't watch.
I think there are people that do. I think there are a lot of people that do, that don't watch it, that aren't going to watch the new 6 p.m. Sports Center. They're not going to want to watch it, and they're not going to. But no. The layoffs were because they're losing subscribers, and they don't have the money, and the sports rights, the TV rights are inflating, and that's what caused it. But there are people, I think, turning ESPN off because of things like that. It's just, you know, comparatively, there's really no comparison, relatively speaking.
Right, yeah. And I think more different. People are probably turning it off because the content's been pretty crazy. I mean, I can personally speak from somebody who was a huge fan of ESPN growing up. I just don't need people standing at a desk arguing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
That does nothing for me. And also, and I've always made it known that the insistence on having, you know, ex-athletes talk about the sports or whatever, I think there's a value in having a few guys here, especially guys having guys that actually know what they're talking about and are really insightful and those sort of guys. That's good. But then it just became a thing of like, let's just get this guy retired. Let's get him on here. He's got to be on here. He's an ex-athlete. And it's like, not every ex-athlete should be there talking about it, because a lot of them don't know how to talk about the sport that they played very well, and there's no content in there. I mean, I don't need to hear Trent Dilfer say National Football League quarterback, you know, seven times in a sentence when he's just dancing around like
because he doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know what to say.
And if you don't know what to say, you know, get out of here. Like, just because you were an ex-athlete and just because you were a quarterback doesn't mean you know how to talk about it. Like, that's and ESPN, I think, fell in love too much with that, and then fell in love too much with, you know, your Skip Bayless's, your Stephen A. Smith's and those sort of things, and said, oh, this is it. And yeah, it was for a little while and people really enjoyed it, but people burn out of that real quick. I mean, people don't want to just watch people argue. And particularly when you lost any amount of, like, you know, Skip just started, it was obvious that it was like, all right, Skip, here's the topic, and okay, who's going to agree on this and who's going to do it? And like, it'd be like, well, I don't think LeBron is very good at basketball. And it's
right.
Like, okay, all right.
Yeah,
like,
just, you're just trying to get.
Yeah, like, people, I think he's like, I don't know why anybody thinks LeBron's very good. I don't think he's very good at all. And it's like, oh, okay, all right. Like, we can, yeah, well, I, you know, Matt Ryan sucks. It's like, no, he doesn't. Like, oh, Matt Ryan lost the Super Bowl. Is he any good? I don't think so. Like, that's where it got a little too wild here. But one thing I was going to actually say is, and you talked about the rights fees and sort of that changing of the guard, is, yeah, that ESPN can get out of that. But then, and I was talking to a lot of people about this, because I think this is a huge moment that a lot of people aren't really looking at in the big picture, or kind of the global picture, is this is ESPN saying, we cannot afford to pay these rights fees. These rights fees are way too much. We're not making a return on investment here.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're saying, if they do find a way to get out of it, if there's some ridiculous stint, ESPN just goes out of business and they can't pay these things, and they go, okay, what do you want us to do? We can't pay these rights fees. It's going to happen, I think, to a lot of networks that are going to look at these rights fees and go, okay, I don't know that we can necessarily pay this, especially if people start cutting cords and doing that sort of stuff. Then what becomes of the leagues and the leagues who are really largely propped up by these TV deals?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a huge bubble that is going to burst at some point. I don't know what it's going to do. But what's going to happen? Because, like, you have teams that, you know, we see that with regional sports networks and MLB teams. Like, you know, the Angels famously signed their random deal or whatever.
Right.
And they now, okay, now we, you know, we make, you know, $1 billion a year on this TV rights deal that we have. Well, the reason they do that is because, you know, LA, well, I don't know, Fox Sports, whatever the hell. I don't know what their network is. But they latch on to every single subscriber in their area and force them to pay, you know, 5 $5 a piece to get Fox Sports, you know, West or whatever, whatever the hell it is, or the Angels Network or whatever. It's like you're forced to pay. Your grandma's forced to pay. Your mom's forced to pay. And if it becomes, like you said, where people either get Sling TV or cable companies go a la carte or whatever, that you lose that then. You lose the idea that, like, oh, we have to force everybody to pay $5, so we're making all this money. Because then it's only the sports fans are subscribing. It's only the baseball fans are subscribing to the New York Yankees Network or whatever, the YES Network or whatever. It's not every single person that lives in New York. And teams have gotten rich off that, and leagues have gotten rich off that, too, where you're forcing people that maybe don't want these things to pay because it's part of their cable package. You look at, you know, go to your cable bill and look, and you're like, Jesus, I don't watch this channel. I don't watch this channel. What the hell?
Right. When's the last time you watched True TV or Animal Planet 2 or whatever?
And you're paying for those. I mean, you're paying maybe like a small amount or whatever, but those sports networks were big amounts or whatever. There's $2 or $3 per bill for a lot of those ones to get that. And if it does become a thing where so many people cut and then the cable companies have to respond by going, okay, we got to go a la carte or whatever, that bubble's burst then, man. Like, because then those leagues, like, what do you, your league money is built off these TV deals. So if it's a thing where ESPN goes, okay, we don't have $1 billion, I don't know what you want us to do, like, to the NBA.
Right. You know, then you know, what are the Dodgers going to do? Because they signed a lot of funny money contracts with the idea that their little network is going to, the Bulls, White Sox, Blackhawks, and Cubs all own a part of
Comcast Sports. And the Cubs, actually, it's funny, they were, I think in the next year or two, due up for that contract. And everybody, you know, a few years ago, we're going, oh my God, they're going to cash in huge on their network. They're going to be an interesting case because, you know, the new network and your own network thing, like, that's kind of a thing from 5 or 6 years ago. The Cubs might be screwed in this and might not get that big windfall of money that they thought they were going to get because there might not be enough people that want to subscribe to your network, or people are going to go, no, I don't want to pay $5 more on my cable. It's already ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there are a lot of Cubs fans. It'll be really interesting. There are a lot.
You can grab $5 from every Cubs fan or whatever. But the reason that you're making $1 billion is because every single person on your block is paying $5.
Even the person who hates sports but watches CNN.
The model might have to be what like WWE does and what UFC does or whatever, where it's like $10 a month or whatever for the Cubs network, and it's a streaming thing or whatever, and they can make their money up that way.
Right, you know yeah, I mean? That's like, that's yeah. probably, you know, MLB Advanced Media, and props to them because they're at the forefront.
Yep.
They're
yep.
running everything, and, you know, other leagues come to them to help run their content delivery networks. But that's probably what it's going to be. The only thing, you know, okay, so what, is MLB TV now going to be $300 for a year?
Right, right. Well, and then you get the differences of the teams. It's because, like, yeah, the Cubs might be able to make on that model. If the Cubs say, we have a streaming network, pay us $10 a month, and you get all of our games or whatever, well, that's well and good because they'll make their, you know, like you said, tons of Cubs fans all across the country and the world or whatever, they'll do fine. But then, like, what of the Rays? Like, if the Rays have to do that, like,
there's a lot of people subscribing.
That's what I mean. So then, like, the haves and the have-nots of leagues can become ridiculous. Like, right now, everybody kind of gets into the pot of the TV money, but it become a thing where it's like, well, now, yeah, the Cubs and the Yankees make, you know, $9 billion a year or whatever, but, yeah, the Rays, like, you got, like, 1,000 subscribers to your network. Right? So, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that,
like
it could
a bad
become a
YouTube
thing
channel.
Where, right, yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, I guess you're okay. That's cool.
It's like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, you got 30,000 subscribers there, and you do like 1,500 views a video.
We play in the AL East. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah,
I know what that's like. Yeah. Like 45,000 subscribers, like 2,000 people show up to watch. I know what that's all about. No, it's gonna be interesting, especially in a league like the NBA, where the salary cap is tied in a kind of amorphous way, but it's tied to that league TV money. The reason that LeBron is in this perpetual one-upsmanship or opt out, then opt back in, is because of the changing salary cap, which is tied to this figurative NBA TV money. And if that goes away or if that falters for any reason, you're going to see salaries dip. You're going to see teams all of a sudden who thought they were in the clear, all of a sudden they're going to be handcuffed. Right. And they're going to have to find ways to go about different ways to go about amassing whatever you need to do, amassing a team to compete for a championship.
Yeah, and it's always going to be the past deals that you've signed too, or that are going to look like that Mike Conley Memphis deal. Like this offseason, Mike Conley got like the biggest contract in NBA history or whatever, because that TV money came in and the Grizzlies were like, oh crap, well, we got a lot of money, here you go, like, you take it or whatever. But it could become a thing where in a few years it's like, oh geez, like, Mike Conley's making like and they might not be able to afford it, and like, then what do you do? Like, you're like, I don't know, Mike, like,
right,
we paid you on the TV money and it's all funny money, so we don't really Davis.
Well, you got to look to the NHL of how that's going because cap has remained stagnant, even gone down a bit because the Canadian dollar isn't doing well and they don't have those big lucrative TV contracts flowing in. And you see teams like the Blackhawks that are forced to every offseason making some very, very difficult decisions on who to extend, whom to trade, when to do it, and you know, even to the point where, you know, there's talk and there's murmurs of you know what, if you're a little bit hurt, how about we just we put you on the reserve list for a bit so that we can stop paying your contract towards the cap so then we can acquire more salary money from other people. It's gotten to that point, and it's interesting, but it's just certainly different. Whereas now, if you're an NBA team and you want to you know how to go out and get a super team. You may not be able to do it, but you know what to do. You can sign guys to the contracts, trade, draft high, whatever you need to do, you know, the bird rights, the Rose rule, all that. You know what to do, but there's really no team that I see that's having to make these tough decisions on, oh, crap, you know what, we're just going to have to get rid of this guy. We would like to keep him, but we just can't because the cap is falling down around our heads. So it'll make for some really interesting you know, team constructions moving forward. But, you know, we spoke about the NFL draft, and Rich, you had an interesting thing in here. We saw a bunch of guys go in the first round of this year's NFL draft who did not play in their final bowl game. Is that the end of it? Is that the our guys, our top prospects now finally going to say, what?
And we talked about this at the time, and I remember we said it was going to be interesting to see these two guys who, and if you remember correctly, it's Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey, the two we're talking about here, were two guys that publicly said, I'm not going to play my bowl game because, I got to get ready for the NFL draft. And, people got really mad.
Right. The one is a businessman. The other is selfish. I'll let you figure out which one is which.
Right. Christian McCaffrey.
Businessman. Looking out for his interests.
Okay. I get it.
But the guy who's been running his ass off for 3 years, doing things that you rarely ever see on a football field at any competitive level, selfish. Bad teammate. And then Ed Orgeron was still there, the bastard. He was still there in the green room with his freaking pudgy, mudgy face, whatever that is. I just want to punch him. He's a definite back of the yards kind of guy, even though he's
certainly not from the South Side.
Right, but he's a guy that would be like, back of the yards.
Yeah, but the Jaguars drafted Fournette fourth overall, and the Panthers took McCaffrey. He'd be a perfect Packer, rather, Christian McCaffrey. But
yep. That is a perfect Packers guy.
Yeah, so the Panthers took McCaffrey at number 8. Both were outstanding prospects who were expected to be selected in the top 10. But then what is significant, and this is from Deadspin, posted it yesterday, I believe, is that both had skipped their meaningless non-playoff bowl games at the end of the last season, and it didn't affect their respective draft status in the slightest. And I think that is the biggest part right there, is because people said, okay, we got to see. Is it gonna affect where people draft them? Are people gonna say, oh, they have character issues, or oh, I don't know that if they're not gonna go out there and play for their team, then how do you know they're gonna play for you in the NFL or whatever? And teams did not give a fuck.
Right. They hemmed and hawed. So there were anonymous executives saying, well, I don't know, but at the end of the day, they're like, oh my god,
he's really good. Leonard Fournette is gonna run people over, and we want to pay him money to do so on our team. So
I don't know if I like Christian McCaffrey at 8, but same idea.
Kind of a bad pick.
Yeah, but the idea is, you know what? Ah, we like him anyway. Screw it. Let's go do it.
Interesting too is because we saw that this particular bowl season was particularly interesting because those two guys sat out, and famously sat out the very good players, big parts of their teams, and they said, I don't really feel like doing it. I'm going to get ready for the NFL draft. But then there were other guys that didn't. There was Jake Butt from Michigan who played in his bowl game, and he was a guy that I forgot where he was actually supposed to go. I think maybe middle of the rounds or whatever. Maybe he wasn't going to be a top 10 pick, I don't think.
No, there was talk of that, he's really good. He's a gamer, but he doesn't have... I forget what it was, but I don't think I think it's the size. I remember seeing him on TV. Yeah. I don't think he just has the size to be
He definitely went from a guy that was going to get drafted to a guy that did not get drafted, and he got hurt in his bowl game. Mm. And pretty famously got the year prior, Jalen Smith got hurt in his bowl game or whatever. And you look at those examples of guys that their draft stock plummeted when they got hurt in a bowl game. And these two dudes said, no, it's not worth the risk, and their draft stock was fine. So if you're a star player, and that's why I kind of posed this question, I wanted to talk about this, you know, topic, because there then was some rumblings. Albert Breer of the Monday Morning Quarterback was asking some agents of what they would do, what they would advise or whatever. And I think we're kind of at the point now, and I it's going to be really interesting to see this next year, that if you're a good player and you know that you're going, I don't think you're playing in a bowl game ever again.
Right, a non-playoff bowl game.
If you know that you're a top 15 guy and like you got good info, and it's like a guy like Leonard Fournette knew. I mean, there was it's not like some random dude at some school and his agent's like, "Nah, buddy, you're going to be top five or whatever." He's like, "Okay, cool." And it's like, you're not top five. But I think overall, no matter, regardless of who you are, what you are, whatever, how much stock are you going to really, what are you going to add from playing in that bowl game? What are you really going to,
nothing.
If it's not the national title, we all know Vince Young. I mean, Vince Young became a superstar from a bowl game, but that was the national championship game. That was a pretty big deal. But like the Chick-fil-A Bowl, the Holiday Bowl, like is you getting a 200-yard rushing game in the, you know, Bell Carrier Helicopter Bowl or whatever? Is that really going to be like, oh man, we weren't going to draft this guy, but wow.
Right. If you're
look
a fringe prospect,
the Hawaii Bowl.
Like, right. If you're a fringe prospect, a bowl game can help you. But if you are a surefire prospect, if you're like a first rounder, let's say, it's a bowl game. It's only as you creep up draft boards, a bowl game is only going to help less and less and less and less and less. Like a bowl game for Mitch Trubisky, I think did they even play in a bowl game? I'm not even sure. But like,
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Phantom prospect, number one overall quarterback prospect, isn't going to benefit at all from a bowl game. He can only get hurt by it. You know, whereas like third round guy, are you a tweener, a second, third round? Maybe a bowl game can help you a little bit more. If you're a fifth, sixth round guy, yes, certainly a bowl game, a strong bowl showing can help you. So as you go up, as you climb the prospect ranks, absolutely. Absolutely, you're going to see guys questioning more and more, do I want to risk plummeting down draft boards? I mean, we're talking, you know, Chad Kelly was talked about at the beginning of this football or last football season as a legitimate first round quarterback prospect. And where did he end up? I mean, obviously he got hurt throughout the season. It's a different set of circumstances. And I think there's also some serious character issues there. But he went from legitimate first round quarterback prospect being talked about in with the Mitchell Trubisky's and the Deshaun Watsons and the Deshaun Kaisers to falling asleep on his couch on ESPN and being Mr. Irrelevant, drafted by the Broncos, you know, with whatever pick number pick overall in the seventh round.
This will tell you how much a bowl game really affects Mitch Trubisky, who of course we will talk about in a sec, went number two overall. He was 23 of 39 with three turnovers in the Sun Bowl. Do you remember that? The Sun Bowl?
I don't think I watched the Sun Bowl.
North Carolina Stanford in the Sun Bowl?
I did not watch it.
Well, Mitch Trubisky sucked in the Sun Bowl, and guess what? Nobody cared. Or the Bears particularly didn't care. Like, yeah, I don't know if nobody cared.
But you see, that
the
may Bears be a special case care. Because Ryan Pace and the Bears may have made a big boo-boo.
They went nuts. They said, this is our guy.
We are going to give you a first, a third, and a future fourth. Come on down. So that we
can
trade at one
spot.
That's
so weird. And it's like, because I get like, okay. And when I was thinking about that, I was like, yeah, look, if it's a guy and you really want that guy and that's the guy you think you need and you want or whatever in the most important position in the field, whatever, okay, it makes sense. But like the NFL, you just can't throw away like third round picks and fourth round picks or whatever. Like,
no, because those guys can't turn into good. Those guys can't.
Exactly.
Can,
it's not,
you know,
yeah.
And they do.
Like, at the NBA, if you're like, okay, we need to move one up because we really need this guy and we think he's great, yeah, give him, you know, all of our second round picks for the next 10 years. Who the fuck cares? You know what
I mean? Right. You're not.
Yeah, like, okay. Usually a second round pick is going to turn out well, but like the chances of it happening are pretty rare. So who the hell cares? You can have all of our second round picks for the next decade. We don't really care. It's not that big of a deal to us. The third round pick in the NFL, like those guys are very good. Like,
right. You're still drafting starters in the third round.
Right.
You're
still
drafting.
You need those guys for depth. And the Bears are a team that, like, famously the past few years have struggled with depth.
Rebuilding the roster.
Lighting third round picks on fire to move up one slot.
To draft again. Just stop.
And then find out that the team before is like, we didn't really want him. Like,
we didn't want him and nobody else wanted him. Nobody else was calling us. It's not like you bid against yourself.
You
bid against
John Lynch.
Nobody. You bid.
You got worked by John Lynch.
Right.
Who's like two steps away from
who
the,
only
the
found
camera.
Out that he was going to be the 49ers GM. He like, he had to call somebody like, hey, you want to consider me? And the guy's like, you know what? Yeah, sure. And now he's like, oh, now I'm doing GM things. This is great. It's You know what? It's very un-Bearsy. The Mitchell Trubisky pick was very un-Bearsy. I'll give it that. And it could be genius. It could also set the franchise back to where it was when, you know, Ryan Pace necessitated being hired. When it was, oh my God, we are a laughingstock in the NFL. You haven't gotten much better from those days, have you? And you may very well continue to be a laughingstock, in part because you just traded away a few future picks.
Yeah, and again, like, if that's the guy, like, I don't mind, like, the pick, it's the idea itself of, like, this is our guy, and, like, I don't know anything about Mr. Trubisky. I don't know if he's going to be good. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to be bad. Quarterbacks are impossible to tell now. I don't know. Like, everybody I think is going to be good always sucks, and everybody I think sucks is good for, like, a year or two, and then their coach gets bored of them, and then they're not, you know, oh, he can't go under center, he can go over center.
David Booty was going to be a thing. Turned out to be
right.
Very
wrong.
Yeah,
like, John David Booty should have been good, but Mark Sanchez, he should have been good, too, and he wasn't. But, no. Matt Ryan sucked. I don't know. He's actually pretty good, but even if he's the guy that you like, still though, the strategy of just like burning future picks and like decent first future picks,
right?
Like, not like seventh or eighth round guys, but even then, like in the NFL, it's very important to get those guys. Like, I think there was a stat a few years ago, the Packers, when they were in the playoffs and doing well, it was something like 95% of their team was like guys that they had drafted. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a big deal. Like, you get your backups, you get your starting linemen, you get those sort of guys. Maybe you don't get the first few rounds are your wide receivers, your running backs, your big power impact guys or whatever, but that's not, those guys do a lot, but they're not the ones that really win you Super Bowls. A lot of times it's like, we got a really good offensive line. Like, you don't know about mm-hmm. these dudes, and but they make guys better. Like, it's such a league and a sport that relies on so many people. And depth, too, because guys are getting hurt left and right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You're going to lose seven guys, you know, by week two. Who do you have to back those guys up?
Just through training camp. Guys are going to get hurt. Tore up my knee. I got a knee scope. Oh, I got a high ankle sprain from doing workouts.
And you can either, you know, go and get a street guy, and the street guy doesn't know your system, doesn't know anything, and is on the streets for a reason, mm-hmm. or you can have a guy who's been in your system, and you've drafted, and you know is pretty good, and he's been there, and he's seen all the plays, everybody knows him, and you could just insert that guy.
Yep.
But, you know, in this case, the Bears have said, now we'd rather just insert whatever, because we want our guy. And I admire the
chutzpah. Yeah. But then second round, trading down, okay, I like, but then drafting the D2 tight end, like that, the Sheeran pick, like he may be good, but I just couldn't help but the whole time I was like, what was the guy's name? Dan Blazine?
Oh, Dan Blazine. Oh, my God.
He's going to be good. He's a gamer. He didn't.
That meant white. That meant bad and white.
Right. And just never played it down. And then you go in then later rounds with one of the picks you picked up in the fourth round, you pick another D2 guy. Like, I get taking one Division II guy somewhere in the draft because, oh, my God, I can't deny how much this kid dominated the competition. So what?
Yeah,
it was Division II.
There's like a few of those guys every single year that it's like, yeah, he played in D2, but like he was very good and he probably should have not been in D2 or whatever. But yeah, there's usually only a handful of those guys. You probably shouldn't end up with two of them.
Right, because if you draft two of them, you are virtually assured that one of them will suck way out loud.
Right.
One of them will become like third string wide receiver from, you know, Eastern Carolina University that gets picked up and then just, I don't know, he gets caught with crack or something or blows out his knee in training camp. And the other guy, you know, maybe will be a insert Division II skill position player here who turned out to be very, very good. Not one doesn't come to mind. Was Jerry Rice wasn't a D2 guy, was he? No, he was an HBCU.
Yeah. Trying to think of your best Division II NFL players. Well, let's do a little NFL Division.
Well, I know the biggest one that's going to come up is Joe Flacco from Delaware State.
Right. All those Abilene Christian guys too. I think they'll all come up.
Johnny Knox. How quickly we forget Johnny Knox.
I feel like he's not going to be on the list, but I'll see. You know, I'll give him a.
Well, he showed up. You know, he was good. Everybody thought. Apparently he's got like serious problems.
Oh, Giant Ox? Well, yeah.
His spine is like held together with spit and will. Point.
Don't Google that ever.
Poor bastard.
Have you actually watched that recently?
What, the video?
Yeah.
No.
I can't. Nope. I tried once and I was just like, nope. And I'm not usually one of those guys that gets like queasy about like, oh, here, this guy blew his knee out or whatever. But like watching that guy's spine, like watching his head like hit the back of his feet was disgusting.
Oh, man.
Danny Woodhead.
Oh, all right. Hoping for a little bit less white and try hardy. Like, give me
I'm trying. Janoris Jenkins, North Alabama.
Okay, there we go.
Janoris Jenkins, yeah. That's
Are HBCUs technically Division II?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think. I don't follow very much. I watch like that one game every year at the time, but
right.
Between Grambling and I don't remember the other team, but. Yeah, this is not a great list here.
It's so really not. It's Tony Romo from Eastern.
Yeah, it's well, Eastern's.
Oh, that's one double A,
I think. Yeah. D2 is like
that's a concerted step down.
Yeah, it's far. This is not a great list here. I'm going up and down.
Oh no. Oh boy.
Yeah, not a great. Janoris Jenkins. Remember when I mentioned him?
Yeah. Yep. So that's what
Danny Woodhead, baby. Adam Vinatieri. How does that work for you?
I don't think kickers.
That's a champion right there.
Yeah, well, so, you know.
South Dakota State, baby.
Yeah.
Malcolm Butler.
Well, Carson Wentz is South Dakota State, right?
I think that's 1AA, isn't it?
Oh, then maybe it is.
I'm telling you, D2 is not good.
Yeah, okay, you know what? Then all the guys I thought were D2 guys were actually Division 1 AA guys. Never
right,
mind.
Right.
This D2 is an awful draft then. What the hell were you doing?
Because it's bad enough to like come back with a handful of like 1AA dudes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, sorry. But
oh,
yeah,
boy.
No, you don't want to. Yeah, sorry.
And the best part is that Mike Glennon was at the Bears draft party at Soldier Field when they traded up to get Mitch Trubisky.
Just like, what am I here for?
Like, what the hell, guys? Like, thank you for
the sweet black punter, Marquette King.
I like Marquette King. Now, yeah, I mean, the soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders.
Right, because he does our favorite thing ever, which we always, like, joke about in games. Like, because the dude's, like, ripped. Like, he gets in the gym hard or whatever. Mm-hmm. Even though he's a punter, he doesn't care. Because that dude is, like, deadlifting and getting it. Like, mm-hmm. We've always said that'd be the greatest thing ever to have, like, your punter just be like, ah, yeah.
Right, just jacked.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because then he just kicks the ball anyway. Like you can be like 110 pounds and do the same thing. But like, I just like the idea. He's like, no, I got to get in the gym and do my thing. Cause, like,
right, because you can look like Chris Cluey, who just looked like a guy who like they pulled him out of like a Dungeons and Dragons like seminar or something. Because
they did, yeah.
Because he's a nerd like that.
He's like, oh, one sec, I got to finish up here. But
You know, I don't really know what Chris Cluey did for, I don't think he was doing a lot of curls and deadlifts and shoulder shrugs, but Marquette King is killing people in the weight room doing big things, and it just because I'm going to work on my physique because that's important to me. That would be because what else are you going to do if you're a kicker, right? You're just going to go home. You can't do that. Your teammates are going to hate you. So what you got to do is you just go in the gym, put in work, and you look like a.
Who was because there was one punter that always got in trouble for PEDs, but I don't remember. I forgot who it was.
Todd Sauerbrunn?
Oh, was it Todd Sauerbrunn?
I thought he was more of a drinky.
Yeah, I think he was the drink. I forgot. There was one. It wasn't.
Was it recent?
No, it was like 2000s.
Okay, Todd.
Yeah, I don't feel like we should look that. maybe it was Todd Sauerbrunn.
Was it earlier mid-2000s Bears punter? Because then it was probably Todd Sauerbrunn. Maybe he was pulling double duty. Maybe he was drinking and shooting steroids.
That's a possibility.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think if you're, you know.
Yeah, no, you can do both.
Taking anabolic, you know, if you're taking.
Yeah, maybe it was Todd Sauerbrunn. I know there is Steve Weatherford, though. Have you ever looked up Steve Weatherford?
Yes, big dude.
Yeah, but that was a guy who made the most of his, like...
Right, but it's not the Steve Weatherford from Illinois. That was Drew Weatherford, also a punter, but not as good as Steve Weatherford.
Are they
not
the same person?
I swear there's two Weatherford punters. One was from Illinois,
No, I'm looking up Steve Weatherford, Illinois.
Okay, so that's him. All right, never mind. There was another Weatherford then.
Well, he was just his, like, bad brother or something, maybe, like... but yeah, no, I remember he was the guy who made the most of like the gym time and like not having to actually practice. So
right, he just worked out.
So he just had like nutritionists because that's the, I mean, that'd be the best ever. You know what I mean? Like because you're like a punter and like you don't really have to do anything. Like, what do you really have to do? But then like you get all the food, you have the weight room, you have nutritionists or whatever, and you can make the most of it. Like these other guys are like killing their bodies and like just to try to stay, like just to get in the game. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you don't have to worry about that. You're not getting hurt. Like, you could just, like, you can lift all you want. Like, your running back cannot lift because he's, like, you know, he needs cortisone shots just to get out of bed. But you're good to go.
Right. You just go in there like it's a normal day at the gym. Like, you just show up, put on your headphones.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? How you feeling? How you feeling? It's like, we just played yesterday. Like
yeah, I think I'm going to ISO my lats today. I think it's...
Everybody else is just taking ice baths and their brains are bleeding and they're trying to put their body back together. And Steve's like, "Hey, what's up, guys? Like,
what up, all right? I'm gonna go put on some Pantera."
Me, like, right.
Well, then you know what? I guess it's great because then you get control of the weight room. Then you get control
right,
of the weight room sound
Pantera,
system.
Like,
you can play whatever you want, or country or whatever
that,
it is.
None of that Fetty Wap for Steve Weatherford. All Pantera, baby. We have a guy at my job who just like plays, like and like etiquette is like you'd put headphones on, right?
Of course.
No, not that he just plays like the loudest, and like I feel bad because like our warehouse guys who are predominantly you know of Hispanic descent or whatever, they have to go up there and just like listen to like you know Motorhead and Pantera at like because this guy brings like a USB speaker like a Bluetooth speaker.
Oh come to, like, on, dude! 10.
And it's like
no. That's a definite foul. That's
like
a party
walking
foul.
Because like I listen to like podcasts or whatever because I'm like a nerd and like I'm like ooh I want to see what this low post
right. That's what
low podcast is all about.
That's
like,
what you should
I
do.
I wouldn't do that. Like I just like blow like blare like
bring in a big ass Bluetooth speaker and put on Woj and just
what will the Rockets do this offseason? I'm very curious. Like, how will the Raptors
deal with
Kyle Lowry's contract this offseason?
That's unacceptable. Now, speaking of Woj in the NBA playoffs, the Warriors are going to be heading. I mean, they're going to play at least. Let me think. Even if they're going to play at least two games in Salt Lake City, and they're apparently they're not happy. The reports are that the Warriors were not so subtly rooting for the Clippers to survive against the Gordon Hayward-led Utah Jazz because the Warriors didn't want to go to Salt Lake City for road games because there's nothing to do there because it's an incredibly religious town that doesn't have a lot of nightlife. Rich, you got some more light to shed on this?
Yeah, so this is Matt Barnes, who ironically...
Of course he would be the guy.
Right, like, maybe you don't want the bar again, Matt, because Matt Barnes is currently being investigated for alleged nightclub assault from earlier in the year, so I don't know, maybe you're the guy that doesn't want to, like...
Maybe you should stay away from talking about clubs for a bit.
Right, of, just like, chill. How much you desire to do clubs or whatever, but anyway, he goes, no comparison, there's no such thing, man, there's no nightlife in Utah. Obviously, as players, you want to be able to have a little bit of a nightlife, but the main focus is winning games. Me, personally, I want to get out there because I want to beat the Clippers. That's my former team and my kids are out there. But as far as the nightlife, there's no comparison to nightlife in Utah and LA. So that's,
but here's,
I like the, here's, I like, oh no, but I like winning more, but I mean, come on. There's no
yeah, but no, we gotta, but there's
like,
a subtle,
it's all about nightlife, but I mean, come on, there's no nightlife.
There's a subtle difference though, because NBA players, like they work from, you know, let's say the first tip is at 7 o'clock. They show up, I don't know, 2 hours before first tip. And then they stay, I don't know, maybe they get some workouts in after the game. The game's 2.5 hours long. So their work day begins at around 4, 5, 6 p.m. local time, runs for about 6 hours, and then they're done. So guys looking to go out at 10 o'clock on a work, quote, work night, if you were, like, Rich, if you were just like, you know what, I got to go out tonight after I get off work. I got to go pound some Cristal at the club because, man,
as
it's been
I often
a,
do.
Yeah, I need bottle service. I want bottles of Grey Goose. I want Patron. I want it all. People look at you like, man, you got to show up to work tomorrow, buddy. Like, did you forget about that? But these guys, their work starts at 6 p.m. So you can go to a club for a couple hours, have a couple drinks, or punch some people, in Matt Barnes' case, and then saunter back to your hotel room and still be okay in time for the next game because they just work differently. I mean, Jordan got a lot of crap for that, for being at the casino until 7 in the morning. but the crap I give him for that is reserved because he claims, like, oh, no, I had the flu. Like, shut up. No, you didn't.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because then there was Andre Iguodala, who said, who I guess was a little bit more reserved, and as Andre Iguodala would be more much more reserved than Matt Barnes. Being more reserved than Matt Barnes is not really something.
That's not a high watermark.
Yeah, I wouldn't put that on my gravestone. You're just closer to normal. Wasn't as bad of a person as Matt Barnes. Not saying that Matt Barnes is a bad person. I mean, he absolutely
is. Yeah, he probably is a bad person.
I mean, he is a bad person, but yeah, a little bit more level-headed here. He says, the problem with Utah is that you're just sitting there and your mind is like dead, because in LA, you got energy for the game. Because you're in LA, you're like, man, this is just the vibe in LA. But in Utah, it kind of lulls you to sleep, and then you've slept for too long, or I'm bored out of my mind, and now you try to pump yourself up for the game. You know, you're in the playoffs and you're supposed to be pumped anyway, but the vibe is just like, man, let's just get out of here. So I think that quote strikes me as, okay, you're absolutely right. I think Matt Barnes is absolutely what you're saying. Matt Barnes wakes up at 3, rolls into the arena, gets himself ready, and then he's out till, you know, 5 or 6 a.m.
Right.
I feel like this quote is Andre Iguodala gets up at like 10 a.m. and then has no idea what he's going to do with his time.
Right. Like, he can only see so many movies. There's only...
Right. Like, yeah, you can only hang out in your hotel or like wander around, because you also can't like wander around, because it's like, oh my God. Because
you're an NBA player.
Yeah, and you're...
Trouble tends to
find you. I've never been
to
Salt Lake City, but I imagine like a 6'8" black dude walking around Salt Lake City.
Oh, you think he's going to stand out a bit?
Like, you're probably either Karl Malone or like, you know what I mean? Like that's Karl Malone. Oh, wait, no, it's...
Oh, damn it. No, it's another one. Okay.
It's another one. But
which one are you?
Yeah, but what's actually funny is, though, I heard, I forgot who this was. It was an old jazz player that said that they really liked Utah because they were able to build like their own little like neighborhood-ish. Because like people said, I think he said that they didn't bother him that much. Like people just didn't care, or like they just weren't invested as much in it, or it wasn't this like crazy thing where you always had to worry about people coming up, and that they would like all live in the same little neighborhoods or whatever, or all live in like the same apartment complex or whatever. And it was actually kind of fun or whatever. And this is not saying that it wasn't a nightlife thing. It was just kind of like a camaraderie thing for like black players playing in Utah. And this is in the 70s or whatever. I forgot exactly who it was. Or whatever. So they actually liked it. But I could see how visiting players, when you're kind of like confined to your hotel, is kind of just like, what do I do? But I bet you get that in a lot of towns or whatever. I've been to some NBA towns, and they're not like, there's not much going on in Milwaukee. Like, I've been there for Milwaukee games. And
yeah, there can't be that much going on in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, oh yeah, Oklahoma City. Yeah, perfect.
And the difference is that, like, okay, let's just say it. The white people in Salt Lake City are weird, but they're weird for a different reason than, say, in Oklahoma City or in other places where you would think a large group of white people would be weird, like in the American South. Because, in a southern town, you think all the white guys are, like, secretly trying to plot ways to kill you because you're black, because they're all racist. But I gotta believe that the white people in Salt Lake City, they're just weird because they're all very religious. They're not the weird, that kind of bloodthirsty, over racist types. They're just like, I really, 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 really like my religion, and I just want it to be incredibly peaceful, kind of weird. It's just a different kind of weird.
Yeah, and I think that's what, if I remember correctly, and I'll try to find that story. I won't look it up right now, but if I find it, I'll share it on our Twitter account or whatever. And I think that's what a lot of the players said. It was just kind of cool. It was like a different vibe from other NBA cities, where everyone's always like, oh my God, it's you. Oh my God. You know what I mean? Like, people get crazed, or you get the weird, like he said, the rural people that are like, hey, get out of here. What are you doing in my town or whatever? Well, I don't think you get that in Utah. Just like, hello, friend. And it's just like, okay, like,
right. If anything, like, they might be like, weird because they're way too,
like,
nice.
Let me shake your hand for too long and talk about like Corinthians, and it's like, yeah, I'm gonna go, man. But like, thank you anyway.
It's like, no, I gotta go to shoot around.
Joseph Smith or whatever, but whatever. I don't know anything about the Mormon religion.
So all I know is what I got from South Park.
Pretty much too, that and Book of Mormon, which is probably not the best source. But it's kind of a weird religion. But then again, I think every religion is weird. End of topic here.
Trying to politely tell Jehovah's Witnesses that I don't want anything to do. Because I try to politely do it, and they're just like,
yeah,
they've got all the angles figured out. Like, I think I'm clever, and they're like, Like, I know how you're going to try to end this conversation, and I'm already 10 steps ahead of you.
And they're physically breaking you down, because they're like, do you not want to talk to me because you're afraid to talk? And one day you're going to break down, John. And I'm convinced, like, I'm gonna text you and be like, hey, you want to do the show? And you're just not gonna respond to me.
Yeah, I'm gonna be like, sorry, I'm doing my mission work. Sorry.
Yeah, and I'm gonna be like, what the hell happened to John? Like, him and I were, we're close, and I haven't heard from him in years or whatever. And then I'll find like a picture, your lovely girlfriend will share a picture of you two in like Uganda or whatever. I'll be like, holy shit! Like, he's like washing,
Yeah, but then I'm gonna come back and I'm coming for you.
Yeah. Right,
if I ever go Mormon, you're coming with me. That's the thing, is that...
Do they pay for those trips?
I don't know. Probably. Okay. They have a ton of money.
Right, because then if you're paying for me to fly places and stuff, I'll do that.
Which is weird. How, like... The Mormon Church doesn't get a lot of crap for having a lot of money and being incredibly secretive about it. Right? Like, the Catholic Church gets a lot of crap for it. Mormon Church, not so much. But they got a lot of money. And they're very, very secretive about it. You know who also is secretive?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Joel Osteen.
No.
Because he bought a basketball arena. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Just, can you imagine? Like, that'd be pretty sweet. Like, yeah, you know what? I'll just buy the basketball arena.
Yeah. No, just, there we go. Thank you.
Like, I just want to, you and I should do that. We should find, I think obviously the Pontiac Silverdome is very available for us.
Right.
If we want. I'm not sure what works, but it'd be pretty cool to just, like, sit and play, like, video games on, like, the Jumbotron or something like that.
I don't think I don't think the Jumbotron is,
That's the problem is, yeah, it's and collapsing and decrepit. So we need to buy one that's not necessarily as decrepit as that. So, we'll have to be.
Well, the Coliseum's going to be out of one of their tenants in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or what was. Do the Chargers still play in Qualcomm? I remember.
Well, they did, but they're not anymore. They're,
All right, so then we got Qualcomm. Nobody's playing in Qualcomm.
Yeah, the old Joe Robbie Stadium, right? No, that's not Joe Robbie's Miami. What was Jack Murphy Stadium? Or some Murphy Stadium. I don't know what the hell it was. That stadium sucks. You don't want that stadium, though. But if we need, beggars can't be choosers,
right? Because there's a finite number of Giga Stadiums and Qualcomm.
Do I have to pay the taxes on it or no?
Well, I don't know. Are you a gigantic corporation with a ton of money? No, then yes.
Okay.
If you aren't a gigantic corporation,
that's going to throw a wrench in our plan.
Yeah,
is the taxes because like I think money wise we could probably buy Qualcomm or whatever, but it's a lot of land and I don't want to pay the taxes on that land.
No, yeah, you can probably if you don't have that, you probably have to.
Okay.
Because otherwise, if you were a gigantic corporation, you could use your money to lobby for the local municipality to pass a referendum that would ease your real estate tax burden. Like,
do you have any examples of this? Or?
Atlanta twice.
Okay.
Let's
stadium that Bartolo Colon outlived, which is my favorite fact in baseball history, is that like that should never, ever, ever, ever happen.
Bartolo Colon should not outlive,
particularly Bartolo
a brick
Colon.
And mortar. Structure built by some of the finest engineers on the planet.
that big old fatty outlived that stadium. That is the most incredible.
Hey, have you seen that like 30-second video of him doing resistance training?
Yeah.
He gets it in there for that 30 seconds.
It's like, are we done? All right, good, perfect.
I swear to God, like that's this all the sweat on his face, that's from that one exercise. Because you think like he's been doing calisthenics, he's running sprints, he's gonna do all this. No. That's like that video cuts in and he's all sweaty because he had to put that stuff on him and he's doing his little thing.
I love this. What a great man.
But again, Bartolo brings us back to Noah Syndergaard secretive about his injury. Last week was he had to be pushed back. He pushed back from a start because of a problem in his bicep. He felt a twinge in his bicep. Refused an MRI. And then this past weekend, when it just so happens that the Nationals put up 23 runs in this game. I don't know if the two are related. Noah Syndergaard had to leave in the second inning after giving up 5 runs in the first. And he complained of a pain in his latissimus dorsi. This time he went for an MRI, and the MRI revealed a partial tear of his right lat muscle. He is currently on the 10-day DL, but will probably be out. This is probably going to be measured in months that Noah Syndergaard is going to be out. And Bartolo Colon is the tie-in here because it was Bartolo Colon who kept the Mets afloat last year when they went through a rash of injuries to their starting rotation. And it looks like it's starting all over again. And the Mets are one in trouble already in the NL East. And now Noah Syndergaard, at this point, is Syndergaard their one? He started opening day for them, didn't he? I believe he did.
So yeah, it wasn't Matt Harvey because he throws like 87 now,
right?
So it definitely wasn't him.
I think he
it
is
wasn't Zach Wheeler because he's got every Tommy John. He's had like 7 Tommy John surgeries, and wasn't Steven Matz because he's just got like weird injuries all the time. So
yeah, so right. The Mets are in a lot of trouble, and Rich, I want to ask you, one, would it have mattered if Noah Syndergaard got an MRI when he complained of biceps tightness and they revealed something? Whatever it is. And would it have mattered to this pending latissimus dorsi injury? And two, should a team have the power to compel a player to do this or that, medically speaking? And this transcends all sports now,
yeah,
because we're obviously, sadly, all too familiar with Derrick Rose, who for the longest time in coming back from his second ACL tear was very, very not really quick in deciding that he wants to come back. And there was a lot of talk in this town about what the Bulls could be able to do or should be able to do to compel him to be like, okay, Derek, now it's time to start playing and doing all the things you do. So would it have mattered? And should the Mets have been able to do something to Noah Syndergaard to compel him to try to find out what's wrong with him?
Yeah, for the first one, I'll get, because that, you know, just talking about Noah Syndergaard, I think in more cases than not, if you're complaining of like my bicep hurts or whatever, that sort of thing, then I think that it is sort of your obligation, the team's obligation, then to figure out what's going on there, because that's not something you mess around with. And you know, you and I kind of privately talked about this, but you know, if or we have it in our show notes as well, is that like, you know, if you're complaining of bicep soreness and you're saying, yeah, it's sore, but I still want to pitch, you know, you push my start back, but I'll pitch. You and I know, you know, anybody that has played sports knows that if something's affecting you and you go out and play through it, chances are you're going to play through it by accommodating in some other way. If your ankle hurts, you're more prone to having knee injuries because you don't walk the same. You don't jump the same. You land differently. You know, those sort of things like that. That, you know, speaking of Derrick Rose, that was one of the big things that happened with him, is he, that the year that he first broke his ACL or tore his ACL rather, he had dealt with a bunch of ankle injuries, and he was, mm-hmm. you know, taping his ankles a bunch and favoring his ankles or whatever. And people said that was probably a reason why his knee eventually gave out, because he was sort of favoring his ankles or really babying his ankles or taping him too much or whatever, so the pressure has to go somewhere. You know, instead of rolling your ankle, the pressure moves up and it goes to your knee or whatever. So in this case, it's hard not to find a parallel in the fact that, you know, he says, oh, my bicep hurts, but I still want to pitch, and then this completely unrelated lat issue happens within, like, and it's not like he pitched the entire game and then at the end it was like, oh man, this kind of hurts. This was like a few pitches in. Didn't he basically get like 19 or so pitches in?
Yeah, and then it looked like he started grabbing at his lat, so you knew it wasn't too bad. Like, he didn't like fall to the ground like Jake Peavy did when his lat muscle just like rolled up into his shoulder blade or whatever the hell happened there. But it was one of those where like he released the ball, went through his follow through, and it was like, ow, 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 this isn't good. This isn't right. Something is wrong. And I think after that, he was taken out of the game.
Yeah. So it's interesting. In that case, I think if you're complaining of something, that you probably should get it checked out and take a look, because if they found a little bit of a tear in the bicep, or they're saying, yeah, you know, you're not nuts, your bicep, there is something wrong with your biceps or whatever, so let's put you on the 10-day DL. I mean, they have a 10-day DL now. There's no excuse not to put a guy on that now. I mean, you basically,
right, because now you'll only miss two starts.
Right, and you can really maneuver it where it's only one start, really. I mean, if you really try to maneuver it properly. But yeah,
oh, that's right, because you can do it retroactive to this.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Mm-hmm. So you can really maneuver that 10-day now where there's really no excuse. To if you even have something a little bit wrong, it's fine. Miss a start, we'll figure it out. We'll put you on this DL. You can kind of chill out a little bit. So yeah, a little interesting in that case. But yeah, there's no reason to not at least check and confirm what the player is saying. Now, as far as your second question, I think this is the more interesting one, and
yeah.
I'm curious what your thoughts on are on this too, because now we can kind of globalize this to not just Noah Syndergaard, but where does the medical, whose responsibility is it? Is it the
right
player's responsibility to sort of follow through with the medical? Is it the team's responsibility to be in charge of it the entire way? Should the team even have that ability to control the player, to tell him what he should do and tell him? Because then that's really a slippery slope too, of like, all right, you have to use our doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use this. And that can run into some issues too, because it could be a thing where, no, your doctor sucks. You know what
right?
I mean? Like it's known that your doctor is really terrible at knee injuries or whatever. So I'm glad that he, you know, you guys have some weird relationship where you send all of your players here or whatever, but I don't necessarily want to. I don't know why players would send a guy, players, you know, commodities to a person they don't trust or whatever, but that has happened before. You know, that's been a case. So that's a really interesting question. I'm kind of curious on your thoughts before I give my answer.
Well,
do you think that is something the team should control, or should the player have a say in it, or should there be a little bit of a give and take where, you know, the team can say, go to here, the player goes, well, no, I like this guy, and they kind of look it over and go, okay, that's fine or whatever, or should the team be in complete control of where the player goes?
You know? Because at some point you start getting into HIPAA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
Yeah, it's some of the team's business, really.
Right, millionaires. I mean, it is these guys business, being millionaires or not, this is HIPAA applies to them as it should. But I think that contractual, it would have to be a contractual relationship. It should be written into the contract in my world. This is what I would be thinking, that we identify this, and through whatever mechanism we notify you of this, we think needs to happen. And if you don't do it, not that if you don't go see our doctor, if you don't go see any doctor, if our doctor has told you you should do this and you don't want to do it, we're going to start withholding game checks because, you know, it's like a spectrum, because there's doing exactly what the Mets want. The Mets wanted an MRI immediately when Thor complained of biceps tightness. They wanted an MRI then, and he said no. Now, one end of the spectrum is doing exactly what the Mets want, when they want it, with whom they want it. Then you move to the left of that, somewhere there's Noah Syndergaard and what he did. And then all the way towards the end, you're getting more towards the other end of the spectrum now, is Derrick Rose saying, nah, my knee doesn't feel exactly right. And the guy, even the guy who performed the surgery, telling the Bulls and telling the media, no, yeah, he should be ready to go now. He's ready for game action. There's nothing more I can do. And then all the way at the end of the spectrum is Madison Bumgarner hurting himself because he's being an idiot, just doing something really stupid. And as you move farther and farther left down that spectrum, I think it becomes easier and easier to start withholding game checks because, well, wait a minute, you know, okay, yeah, it is your health, et cetera, but we're paying you millions of dollars. And if you start if you just start not taking care of yourself in whatever respect, what did we agree to here really with this contract? It's, you know, it's similar to a guy showing up fat. Right? You give a guy a big contract. They accused Mike Trout of it, but he just got bigger. You give a guy a big contract, and then he shows up for spring training or OTAs or whatever, and he's just like, dude, are you really, really fat? Did you get really fat in the offseason? Because you should probably not be that fat. So how do you deal with a fat guy? The Packers did it. They've somehow figured it out. They got Eddie Lacy figured out, right? So I think somewhere, at some point, you start withholding game checks. I don't know if it's here. It's closer.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It's closer
though.
Than
yeah,
not.
It is, because sports is so weird, because imagine, like, I can't fathom, you know, my job being like, hey, this is the doctor you have to go to, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I'm complaining of headaches.
Right.
I go, well, no, you got to go to this doctor. You got to do this.
Or you're fired.
They never do that. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Go to our doctor,
like, that would
fired.
That would never happen. They would just say, go to a doctor or whatever. But in sports, because there's so much money involved in that, there is a little bit more of that control that the team has. But like you said, it leads to a lot of really interesting questions of you know, who should really be in charge of that. And it was kind of interesting. I know Chicago Bears player Kyle Long ran into some issues this offseason because the Bears recommended he do this, this, and this. And the offseason came, and he basically said, I'm not doing that, and the offseason is my time. I can decide what I want to do with my offseason.
Mm.
You know, the Bears recommended get this surgery or whatever, and he said, I don't want to spend my entire offseason rehabbing. This is my time off. Like,
right.
I'm going to spend that, you know, doing some stuff here and there, seeing what I could do. Of course, I want to come in healthy, but I don't want to come in healthy in the sense that my entire summer, my entire time off was spent, you know, in the weight room or in the facilities, you know, rehabbing a surgery that I don't know necessarily that I need.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, and we're starting to see a little bit of pushback from players. I think Derrick Rose is one of those first examples, but you're seeing it more, you know, I think a little bit more and more where at least for the offseason, players are going, okay, yeah, you control me during the season, you control me, you know, when I'm an active player in the active season or whatever to do stuff, but in the off season I can kind of do what I want to do, and if I want to go to X to get my surgery or if I want to opt to not get a surgery, you know, who are you to control what I do in my free time?
Right. If I want to go to Germany
really
to get the platelet rich,
exactly, yeah, that's a great example,
the thing
there's
done,
there's a lot of guys that do that, we don't even hear about a lot of them. But yeah, you want me, and you know, and to a lot of these players, and I respect that, because you know, on one hand you have a team and a league or whatever that, you know, in a country rather, that's really dependent on, you know, get the surgery, pop yourself full of pain pills, and then, you know, get back and you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some guys might go, yeah, I'll just fly over to Germany and get this thing, and then I don't have to get the surgery, and then I don't have to do pain pills, and I don't have to do this or whatever. I could try to, you know, do it in a way that's not that. But
the thing is, I might be out a little bit longer because, like, the team is going to say, you know what, just get it shaved. The meniscus is the most common one. They're just going to say, get it shaved, pill up so that you can deal with the pain, and then get back. But if the guy says, well, no, I'm going to go to Germany and get the platelet-rich treatment infusion into my knee, and then I'll rehab it for a couple weeks or however long the time frame is. The trade-off is I don't get cut, but it's a longer rehab because, you know, it needs to happen naturally, but the team wants it to happen right now, and they get it shaved and then just pill up and let's go. And you're right. At some point, you're talking about a player's autonomy as a person, and, you know, it's... I will probably almost always defer to the autonomy of the person over the autonomy or over the interests of the multinational, big ass gigantic corporation. But I just think that in this scenario, I think the Mets should be able to throw some shade towards Noah Syndergaard and have it stick. Because what the hell are you doing, you big idiot?
Yeah, and I think there's a big difference, too, in terms of leagues that have guaranteed contracts versus leagues that don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the NFL, I would never listen to my team because you are absolutely 100% just a commodity here. We saw a guy like a Teddy Bridgewater who was on top of the world, Minnesota Vikings future, whatever, you know, blows his knee out. Now they're declining his option. Like, he's gone.
Right.
He's done. And that's and they were, oh, my God, we're so heartbroken. Oh, my God, that was the heart and soul. And yeah, it's funny how in a year later, right, like, and now, you're not healthy. Get the fuck out of here.
Right, buddy. And now all of a sudden, Mike Florio's got this weird rule that they can use to keep it so that his option year stays over this one if he's on IR, and then they don't have to pay him as much if he's on IR. And, oh, my God. Yeah, that's...
So it's... Whereas, you know, a team that, I guess... But then you get into issues, too. Well, if it's signed to a seven-year deal, do then you have autonomy over my life? But if I'm, you know, if I'm due for a contract next year and you say, yeah, get the surgery, you know, because there can be an issue, too, where a guy, you know, has an issue in a contract year or whatever and says, nah, you know, I'm not going to get that surgery because then I'm out for the rest of the year or whatever. Or you have an issue where a guy's in a contract year and, you know, he says, yeah, I'll get the surgery, whatever. And then maybe you get the team that goes, no, you know, we're done with you. You're done. You know, after this year, you're done with us. So, no, you should go out there and pitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should go pitch for us. Or, you know, so... It's a really interesting thing, and we saw that, I guess, you know, the Mets with Matt Harvey a little bit, you know, that quite a few years ago when, you know, they were kind of bucking the trend of his pitch limit and stuff like that. There was a weird thing of them wanting him to pitch, and then he wanted to pitch in this playoff game, and he wanted to do, you know, it was very weird with a Matt Harvey scenario in that sense. So, yeah, I don't know.
He went all nine in a World Series game, didn't he?
If I remember correctly, yeah.
Like coming off of Tommy John surgery.
Right, yeah. Blew through his innings limit and stuff. And I guess Steven Strasburg is a great example, too, of like the innings limits or whatever, of an agent-imposed innings limit, a player-imposed innings limit, a team-imposed limit. So it's really, yeah, we're in a whole new world, particularly with, you know, players now having more power than ever and agents having more power than ever. And the team's really being, you know, for the first time in probably history of sports, not being the power brokers of
right, and they don't like it.
No, they don't. And this Noah Syndergaard is kind of the Noah thing, I think, is him just being an idiot.
Right. You know maybe, I mean, it should, like, be more informal, where they, you know, some people need to call Noah Syndergaard an idiot instead of calling the Mets idiots for handling this. Even though the Mets also did things stupidly, Noah Syndergaard also needs to be taken to the woodshed over this.
Well, I mean, they can't tie the guy up to a board and throw him in the... If they say, hey, Noah, get an MRI, and he goes, no, I don't want one. And like, no, I'm good. Like, at some point, the Mets, you know, like you're saying, withholding game checks or whatever, but at some point, don't they just kind of have to throw up and go, okay, whatever. Like,
right.
If you're not going to do it, you're not going to do it. Like, we tried, you know, I don't know how much of a fight they put up. I don't know if they really went after him. But if he's so stubborn, oh, no, I'm good. Because, there was an example Jay Jaffe wrote for SI, and I forgot about this last year, that Noah Syndergaard pitched like half the year with a bone spur in his elbow. Just didn't tell anybody.
Right.
Like, and players do that. Like, athletes...
I didn't tell you this.
I'm
just I'm not going to tell you about my ankle hurting.
Although my biggest pet peeve is like after the season when they're like, yeah, you know, I wasn't playing 100% or whatever. I'm like, well, then get out of the damn game because you like,
right.
And it's often guys who are like bad.
A lot of losers talking about all the injuries they played with.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I struggled this year, but my wrist was hurt, you know, sore all year. Well, then sit your ass down.
Right. After you blow a 3-1 lead in the NBA finals, I hear a whole lot about how tired you were.
Right, then sit down. Like,
I just had to get one of those in there.
No, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But no, yeah, you always get that. Like, the exit interviews is like, yeah, well, you know, this guy was playing with this, and this guy was playing hurt, and this guy was doing this or whatever. And I've always been a big proponent of, well, sit your ass down then, because you're not helping the team if you're playing, you know, 75%. Chances are the guy that's on the bench that's not as good as you when you're 100% might be better than you if you're 75%.
Yep.
Or just don't say it. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, if you're going to be that guy that's playing through ankle injuries or whatever, oh, well, you know, I had a hurt ankle all year. Don't tell me that when you're losing. You know, don't tell me that when the season's over.
You know what? And I don't have the research to back this up, but I can almost guarantee you that in no single championship parade speech has a player talked about the injuries they played with that season.
Right.
Yeah. Right? If you've got the Lombardi Trophy, if you've got the MLB Commissioner's Trophy, if you've got the Stanley Cup, and you're on the stage going, yeah!
My rotator cuff hurt all year!
Like, yeah, man, you know what? My agent said I should sit down and they should shut me down for the year, but I just said no, brother. I just kept on trucking because I love this team. None of
Hulk
them talk Hogan. Like that.
What did Hulk Hogan win it?
I don't know. Yeah. Stanley Cup. Well, you know, they just bring him on the stage because he's not doing anything. So, come on, Hulkster. Like, yeah. Although it would have to be a Tampa Bay team to win a championship. And I don't know, Lightning are probably the closest.
Yeah, I think the Lightning did bring them out when they won their...
my God, did they really? Yeah.
I think they did.
The Bucks might be. The Bucks might be moving forward. The Bucks, they've got some weapons around Jameis Winston now, so they may be one to watch after this draft. But, right, like none of the winners are like, well, you know, I worked hard this season. I worked through a lot of this stuff. But single one of the losers, well, my knee, I banged up my knee about 6.5 weeks ago. Did you see that? It was game 123. Yeah. And I didn't that's when I hit that slump and I started hitting 225. And
trying to play through injury. I tried to play through injury. Don't.
Right, don't. How about you just tell your team and chill out and wait, and then you'll feel better. But on the flip side, you can give him credit because, you know, give Thor credit because he wants all these players because they want to play, the guys that lie about the injuries or whatever, they want to play. But it's just like, no, you're helping yourself better if you can just sit down. Especially because maybe he didn't understand it. It's like, well, Noah, when you put on 15 pounds of muscle and now you're throwing a 94-mile-an-hour slider, you maybe need to sit when stuff starts to hurt because that's a lot of strain on a whole lot of things going on.
Well, and just this the example too of, you know, again, like his biceps hurt, so he probably changed a little thing in his delivery, and then you're like you're what you're doing, Noah, is a very unnatural thing. Like, what any pitcher, like, you don't want to mess with your mechanics. You don't want to go out there if anything isn't right because your elbow.
Then you start working muscles that never worked in that way before.
And that energy has to go somewhere. The energy that pops out of your elbow and throws that ball 100 miles per hour, you know, if you change a little bit here and do a little bit here and you plant your foot a little bit different, things got to go. Like, the energy has to go somewhere.
Yep. It has to go somewhere. Like this show. The energy goes into and out of this show all the time. All the time. We'll wrap it up there, I think. This has been a good, like, hour, almost hour and a half return to glory here. I just want to say that the Chicago White Sox are currently beating up on the Kansas City Royals again. They're up 2-0, and nobody knows in baseball what's going on.
Yeah, the team, they can't even lose, right? That's so White Sox, too. And I kind of thought about that at the beginning of the year. I was like, look at these idiots. They're going to win, like, 85 games or whatever.
Right,
like,
just enough to
try to lose. Like, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they're going to be like, yeah, we won, like,
right, they'll buy
games.
At the,
like, what are you guys doing?
They'll fool themselves into buying at the trade deadline. Right.
Yeah, like, they're going to definitely acquire somebody, like, maybe not trade everybody. Like, they might still try to do this rebuild, but it might just be, like, kind of half-assed now. And, like, versus, like, I loved it. It was just scorched earth this offseason. Like, fuck this. Screw this guy. Get this guy out of here. But I guess the telltale sign will be is if they start sending some of these guys off, like, if a Miguel Gonzalez gets traded.
Right.
But then you get this weird thing where, like, and it sucks that they're doing, like, as well as they're doing. Because if you're, like, 500, like, team people get it. But, like, they're... like, good. You know what I mean? And that's
right,
like,
they're beating team, they're beating divisional opponents, which is exactly
right.
What,
so,
you,
like,
need to
your
do
fan
to make
base,
the playoffs.
You can't you can't trade those guys in the middle of doing that, because then it's, you can't, because yes, like, smart fans like you and I or whatever are gonna be like, yeah, well, that's fine, like, this team is probably not gonna be very good and you shouldn't do this or whatever, but, like, you're
uh-oh, Rich, sorry, we had another skip there, just got refreshed. Okay, continue. You said the smart fan is going to understand.
Right, like, you and I are going to understand that if they trade a Miguel Gonzalez, if they trade an Avisail Garcia or whatever, we know the, you know, Jose Quintana or whatever, we understand. We know what's going on. We know that they're trying to do this. But, like, you're kind of lower rung fans, which just makes up the majority of your fans, the people that are actually, you know, going to the ballpark every night and doing that. They're going to be kind of pissed if you're in, like, second place. you know, a game out of the division and dominating the rest of your division or whatever, and you're trading like your best starter or whatever.
This is a team that's still haunted by the white flag trade.
Exactly. In 1997, they were a team that, you know, that was a team that on paper, they were not going to beat the Cleveland Indians. Everybody knew they weren't going to beat the Cleveland Indians. They knew they weren't going to beat the Cleveland Indians to win the division, but you know, they traded a bunch of guys off and the fans went, what the hell? Like, you were right there. You were in second place. Like, you could have maybe done it.
Right.
And now the Sox are just in this weird, terrible position where it's like.
And especially if they sign that, the international free agent, the big kid out of Cuba.
Robert. I don't know if it's Robert, but yeah, he's awesome.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that swing.
But yeah, and then you get this situation where it's like, and like you said, like you're doing all that you should do to make the playoffs. To beat your division opponent.
But you're not in your playoff window. You shouldn't be in your playoff window yet because you haven't traded everybody who sucks. Damn it.
I guess we're now seeing how important it was to get rid of Adam Eaton and Chris Sale. Because people said that. Like, and I remember I talked to you about this like a few weeks ago on the show that there was like people with rumblings of like, maybe they're not doing a full-on rebuild like we think. Maybe they just were getting rid of these turds. Like,
maybe they just didn't like, they really didn't like Chris Sale, didn't really like
him. And Ron Ventura was such a shitty manager that just getting rid of those guys was enough to, like, kind of get the team sort of there. Like,
right, and the big thing...
You get rid of Brett Lowry, you get rid of Adam Eaton, you get rid of the two big, like, try-hard turds, you get rid of Chris Sale, who just was kind of a turd.
Who I'm guessing everybody hated. Everybody probably put on the, oh, I love Chris Sale, but it's just like, oh my God, this guy's just such a D-bag.
Right, he's so good, but God, he's such a D-bag. And then, like, Rob Ventura, who you had to, like, poke to be like, hey, Robin, what do you want to do? I don't know.
Can I bring in Matt Albers? Like, no, Matt Albers is in the game. Like, okay, yeah. Can I bring in Matt Albers? No.
Yeah.
No, he cannot.
How about we bunt? Let's not bunt, Robin. Which, the greatest story ever is how they hired Robin Ventura. They called him.
Okay.
Like, in Major League, you know how, it, like, in Major League, they call, you know, what's his face? And
right. Oh, you know, I don't know.
He's working at the auto body. Like, oh, I don't know. Like, that's what they did for Robin Ventura. Like, hey, Robin, you want to manage? And he was like... Not really.
Yeah.
And then they like tried to give him contract extensions like numerous times, and he was like, not really. Which I feel like if you have to call the guy, then maybe don't hire him.
Right. If you have to call the guy and then can talk him into it, and then talk him into the extension that you want to give him.
Like, Robin, here's free money.
Yeah, I don't know if I really want to do it. I just
like, maybe that's not the guy to motivate your team to go out there and win.
Yeah,
like,
but now maybe they have Ricky Renteria, my friend, and Hawk told me he speaks magic Spanish.
He does speak Spanish better.
I don't know. Is that like a different dialect? Because I learned
Spanish,
a little bit of Spanish, but
yeah. See, I don't know any Spanish, so I can't say.
Well, there's there's like in Spain, there's a different like hue to the dialect of Spanish, and I'm sure it's true throughout all Spanish speaking nations, like there is with English. But it's just I only learned the one Spanish, and Hawk is telling me that Ricky Renteria, because I think Robin Ventura also spoke Spanish. I don't maybe not 100% fluently, but
yeah,
Ricky,
he probably didn't speak very, very good English because he's kind of seemed like he was just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, he's just,
like,
yeah.
I'm sure he also had like he wasn't a fiery Latin. I'm sure he also had a large malaise and
right. He also he wasn't a funny Latin either. He just
no, he wasn't
all the blatantly racist things that Hawk says that people just
eh. See, I think isn't magic Spanish just Portuguese?
That may be true. Yeah, that's right.
So
you know,
Rick
I think
Renteria
maybe that's the
yeah.
maybe Ricky Renteria is actually speaking Portuguese to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been doing it wrong all along.
These players in the Dominican
like you're not like they don't speak Portuguese in the Dominican Republic. Like, well,
maybe they do in these little.
It's
islands.
Like
they
a subculture, like in baseball.
Portugal was like the you know they were one of the axes, right? It was them in Spain. They were like split up the spheres of influence, right?
Yeah. That's true. Maybe it's
so
like maybe it's like speaking Carney, right?
Right, yeah.
Because
like
Carney
they
is
know that
English.
These village people knew right. Portuguese, but that's all they actually know is Portuguese.
Oh, I think we're onto something. Oh, all right, Latin baseball players with the Portuguese subculture, we're onto you, buddy.
Right.
We're going to come get you. We're going to figure it out, and Ricky Renteria is going to speak the magic Portuguese. He's got a
Does Portugal still have any land holdings? I'd like to think that they still do, but...
I don't know.
They gotta have just some random islands, like right.
I guess. Well, Portuguese also has a strong holding in Brazil. Brazil, they speak Portuguese.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Because that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I always did get a little confused by that.
Right, because Brazil, like you see Brazil, and you're like,
they
all right,
Brazilian,
they speak Spanish. They've got to speak
or their own.
Or their own specific. They're like, no, Portuguese. Like, wait a minute, why do you guys speak Portuguese? Maybe it's an interesting story.
Here we go. I think we've broken it.
All right. We need a hit. All right. Now we're going to start. This is the ending of the KMP show. Now begins KMP History Hour, mm-hmm. the podcast where we were history sleuths and we figure out.
Including very wrong things like.
Well, we're going to.
Hey,
well, we're going to.
Still own any.
Well, we're also going to find Hitler in Brazil or Guatemala or somewhere.
Yeah, where did he end up going? I forgot.
I don't know. There was that big series, and then it just ended up like a big wet fart where it's like, we don't really know where he went.
All those TVs. I love that. When people like watch those, like, ooh, maybe they're going to find Bigfoot. Like, if they found Bigfoot, like, that would be a big deal. It wouldn't wait till, like, the last episode of season 3 of Finding Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be like, or like, we're going to go in to find Nessie. And it's like, I feel like if you actually found the Loch Ness Monster, like, it would have been a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And, like, I would have heard about it on, like, the news, and it wouldn't have waited for, like, this, like, thing that was taped, you know, years ago and edited on the editing room floor of some, like, guy, you know, some production company.
Right. The editor guys would be like, holy crap, this is the Loch Ness Monster. And there's an exec holding the non-disclosure agreement, right? Like,
read the contract, buddy. We got to wait.
That's true. Well, they keep 10, WWE yeah. storylines under wraps pretty well, right?
They do. Yeah.
It's probably similar. Right? Figure out which Rock, which, you know, pay-per-views The Rock is going to headline just to show mm-hmm. up. They keep that under wraps. So I got to believe that.
Okay, so we're going to do the History Hour.
The KMP History, yeah.
We figure out what land holdings Portugal still has.
Right. We're going to call some people. We're going to call.
The Netherlands. That's my favorite part about the World Baseball Classic is, you know.
The Netherlands run.
You're like, Team Netherlands. Oh, they're going to suck. And there's just a bunch of freaking guys from like Caracas and like these random islands. You're like, oh, okay. Because the idea of like Team Netherlands and it's like, oh, okay.
It's oh,
like,
it's a, yeah, it's all their. Like,
hi, I'm Xander Bogaerts and I'm, you know.
Right. That'd be like, you know, like if Team Great Britain, but it was Team like. Great Britain from 1750.
Right, like all their.
It's like everywhere. Like, yep, this is our team now. We're doing the history.
Which was funny on Twitter how many Americans were like, I don't know why Puerto Rico doesn't play for us. Which is, to be fair, like I could see the Team USA being like, hold on a minute. Like
you guys get basically everything except, well, but hey, you know what? That's where they draw the line. It's like, yeah, we'll do all this stuff, but we're just not going to go full on statehood. And you know what?
Which would be pretty cool because I'd like to just be able to like saunter on over to Puerto Rico whenever I want. But
where is Puerto Rico? Is that like between Florida and Cuba?
this is not a good start.
This is not a good start to the geography history podcast. Like, where is Puerto Rico?
Where the hell is Puerto Rico?
I don't even know. And what language do they speak there?
What do those Puerto Ricans even say? All right,
let's see where it is.
Vanilla Puerto Rican. Yeah, where is that Puerto Rico?
All right, so it's east of Cuba. All right, so it's the island that is to the east of the Dominican Republic and Haiti, and on the to the extreme west is Cuba. So
okay,
there you go. And north is the Bahamas.
We're learning. This is it. We learn. You learn.
Right. Here's Turks and Caicos. There they are. There's all the magic island chains where rich white people go to get obscenely mm-hmm. drunk. Nassau, of course. Freeport. Oh, that's
where the Nassau Coliseum is, right?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
No, I think that's a different. Okay. I think that's a different Nassau.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, okay, so that Puerto Rico's kind of far. Like, that's that.
Yeah, you're not sauntering over there.
No, that's going to be a while, yeah.
Because, like, you can hop on, it's like a 30-minute plane ride from Miami to Havana. And Havana's mm-hmm. got to be a cool place, right? Like, Cuba, just get your shit together.
Oh, I think we're good now, right? You can go.
Yeah, but they still...
I don't know if you're good.
You know, they're not as up with the...
We're good. No, everybody
democracy.
Said everything's good now. Yeah. So.
It's like, no. But Obama went there for a baseball game. Everything's cool.
So everything's good. We're good. Everything's fine.
Yeah, I think we're good. Okay. All right. Well, then there you go. Then anymore. We will do Havana. We'll do a live show from Havana. Well, not live. We'll just record it in Havana and then put it up.
Riding our, like, 1970 car.
Right? Like our 1950s Ford. Just like.
It'd be great to go there. It's just like a, you know, you fall back to the.
We'll have the death of. We'll just have, like, Central American baseball prospect death, where it's just like driving down the bad roads, horribly drunk.
Oh, you and I, we're gonna just gonna yeah yeah.
We're just gonna get rip roaring really drunk, driving 80,
and drive our really fast car.
Woo!
No street lights, nothing. Just
and then it's a tragedy.
Off a cliff,
and
yeah.
It's a tragedy.
Is it as much of a tragedy if you or I die?
You know what? No, I don't think it is. Then it's just weird being assholes.
Right, yeah.
But if it's, you know, although, hold on, if we kill, if a Cuban, or excuse me, if a Central American baseball player or prospect kills us drunkenly driving, is our death tragic?
No, just theirs.
Theirs is tragic.
Because they offered something to the world. We have offered nothing.
Do we get the show?
But this is more of a negative to the world. This is taking up like
there's going to be one person that where are we at now? An hour and a half. They're going to donate an hour and a half of their time, and they're just going to look at themselves like, what the hell did I just do with my life?
Like, all we're doing is like wasting space on the internet. Like this right? finite amount of space that the internet has, and we're just wasting it for no reason.
Yeah, that's what we do, though. I mean, come on, there's some bad stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. No, we're much better than most of those people.
We're better than the Woj podcast.
Oh, wow.
Not in terms of viewership.
Like the Redix podcast.
Or
sponsors or guests.
Knowledge.
I think we get guests that are right up there.
We could explore guests. Like, it's just a scheduling thing. Plus, we're lazy.
He gets like NBA GMs or like active players. And, you know, we could
probably get some guys from some message boards.
Matt Buser. We can get Matt Buser.
We had Matt Buser on.
Yeah,
we had a guy to talk Predators hockey who didn't really want to talk Predators hockey a lot.
Who was that? We had a guy that talked Predators hockey?
Yeah, and I asked him, I'm like, hey, are there any advanced goaltending metrics? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, oh.
I don't remember this at all.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. I have no idea. It was when Matt Miller was making a big run as a goalie for the Preds.
Yeah, I think we went through a while where we started to try to talk to bloggers, and then we realized, like, because this was like the early days of bloggers, and a lot of them were horrible. I remember we talked to some NBA guy, and he was just the absolute worst.
Yeah.
Like, nothing to offer whatsoever. I forgot what his name was.
But then we had good stuff. Then we had one of the Fire Joe Morgan guys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Ken Tremendous, not the good one. Ken Tremendous is the good
one.
No,
we had Dan King was his name. I forgot.
Yeah.
Pen handle. Maybe I just revealed him to the world. I don't know what his pen name was, but...
And then, as you said,
Dave
Matt
King,
Buser.
Dave King it was.
We had Matt Buser. He was nice. And he actually got into it, too.
No, he wanted to be on the show.
Yeah, he was like, we're like, Matt Buser, friend of the show. And he's like, yeah, thanks for having me on. And we're like, you are an actual person. And we're just douchebags. What are you doing?
We're like college kids. We're just yelling. What are you doing? Luckily, we've moved on.
We've gotten much better. People, yeah. Much better from what it was. You've just listened to an hour and a half of us being better. This is better. Okay. Think about that.
Yeah, right.
Comparatively speaking, this whole thing is like light years better than what we did. And that's something to wrap your mind brain around until we're back in a couple months with episode 36.
No, not that. I'm not going anywhere. I'm here.
Okay, all right.
We're good. I'm not going anywhere.
All right, well, stay tuned for the KMP History Show, the history podcast coming your way.
Geography. Yeah, where the hell is?
That should be the podcast.
Uganda.
There it is. That's the podcast. It's where the hell is this?
Insert country.
You know what? That might be a good bit.
Corsica,
if this was,
that's a new, I found out Corsica. Is a country that exists.
What the hell? Where the hell is Corsica?
Yeah, exactly. It's off the coast of Italy. We're flying, and our pilot's like, so we're gonna take it.
Is Joel Quenneville your pilot?
Well, they always talk like that. It's like,
we gotta get in there. We gotta get into the corners. Tasers, gotta.
Which is if I could fly a plane, which I absolutely cannot, and I do not want to.
Yeah,
I feel like I could do the voice pretty good. Like, I don't know if there's like the captain. Does like the voice thing, or maybe the co-cat, whatever it is. I just want to be the voice guy, because like you just have to kind of be like, you know, just like
airline voice guy. That's
I just want to be like, and he was like, yeah, we're gonna go over Corsica, and we're gonna take our flight. And I was like, what the fuck is Corsica, whatever. And then like I didn't have signal on the plane, so I was like, oh my god, I cannot wait to get off this plane so I can figure out what the fuck Corsica is or whatever. And it's an island off Italy.
Oh wow, what do they do there? Just
I don't know. Just kind of
whatever.
Know.
Are they Italian?
Island
technically,
life, I think. Yeah, I think they're more French, actually.
Really?
In Corsica, yeah. It's between France and
okay. And all right, so they're
Tyrrhenian
fighting it out
sea or whatever. So
yeah,
I don't know what else happens in Corsica, but Corsica exists. So where the hell is
Corsica?
Yeah, it's like next to Italy.
It's to the left of Italy. It's to the left. When you're in Italy, go left.
Yeah. That's been this episode of Where the Hell Is?
This has been the KMP Show, episode number 35. As always, go to...
Frank Thomas episode. Oh, we should have talked about that the whole time.
Which one?
The Frank Thomas episode.
Oh, Jesus. Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Big Frank. Big Hurt.
Be sure to go to ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com. That's ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com. We are also on iTunes. Subscribe to the KNP Show on iTunes at itunes.kandpshow.com. That's itunes.kandpshow.com. That way you'll never miss one glorious episode of this, whatever this has been. This has been the KNP Show. For Rich Kraich, I'm John Playtech. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time. We're out. Bye.